This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Hey, thanks for coming. Hello, everybody, and I'd like to thank you all, and I'd like to thank your parole officers for extending your curfew just this one time. Tonight's guest is Fred Couples. Now, I know, Fred was my guest the last time, too, but this isn't a repeat. It's an entirely different show. OK, it's not entirely different. I mean, Fred and I were discussing golf in Cabo San Lucas on that one, and Fred and I are discussing golf in Cabo San Lucas on this one. But the things we're discussing are entirely different, I promise. For example, we're going to talk about his heartbreaks and triumphs at the Ryder Cup, his experience sweating with the oldies on the PGA Tour champions, his emotional selection to the World Golf Hall of Fame, and, you know, you get the idea. There's a lot to come. First, though, I thought I'd catch you up on what you may have missed.
In case you were too busy corralling your cattle to watch, here are some highlights from Fred Couples Part 1.
You've managed to weasel out of this interview about four times.
After years of dodging my interview requests, Freddie finally agreed to do my show in picturesque Cabo San Lucas.
As you can see, the grass is cut right up to the edge of the desert.
We talked about his rash decision to turn pro.
Maybe the greatest thing I ever did, yeah. Or maybe the worst thing I ever did. And I called home Sunday night, and my dad hung up.
And he recounted the miracle shot that won him a green jacket.
All I kept thinking about was, if I fluff this chip, yeah, it's going to hit the hill and roll right back into the water.
We got totally zen and discussed his stress-free approach to life.
I don't do a lot, and I do that very, very well.
And he even recalled the time he was accidentally baked while playing at the World Cup.
And I looked at him and I went, wow, like I was high.
So there you have it. Now on to part two with Fred Couples.
Jeez.
You were 8 years into your career before you made your first Ryder Cup. Was that a goal?
I would probably be honest and say no.
Yeah.
You know, not like it is now. I didn't really know what the Ryder Cup was all about. Mm-hmm. So I made my first team at the Belfry.
Yeah, you knew what it was all about after that one?
I darn sure did. Yeah. And we had an unreal team, which we always do, and so do they. I think it was a huge, huge honor, more than me figuring out, you know, just what I did. I mean, the Ryder Cup was the Ryder Cup. We very rarely lost, and then we lost, and now I'm on this team, and it was something else. I'll tell you what.
You played in five of them from 89 through 97, and they were some of the most nail-biting, intense,
right,
amazing events. Where do they rank in importance, your career?
Well, the Belfry, probably, I looked at golf a lot differently. Our captain was Ray Floyd, and...
That must have meant a great deal to you.
Yeah. My first pairing in the Ryder Cup was with Lanny Watkins, of all people. Lanny and I talk about it, not as much as we used to, but it was such an odd pairing. What's Lanny do? He hits every shot right down the middle of the fairway. What do? I have a tendency to drive it offline. Lanny makes a putt, he goes crazy. I make a putt, I kind of grab it out of the hole and
feel good
about it. You're
slightly less likely to fall asleep.
Right, so we didn't do well, and it has nothing to do with the pairing. It was all me, and I didn't play well. Then I played the singles, and I played Christy O'Connor, who became great friends after that. We had an unbelievable match. And I'll never forget the last three or four holes. A lot of the team was following us, especially on 16, 17, and 18. And to this day, the 17th hole I three-putted, a par five, to have the hole. And I just couldn't really function. All I did was line up my putt. I just saw this wave of USA players, and I thought, wow, I make this little six-footer in front of all these guys, and my mind wasn't working. Plus, I was a complete nervous wreck. And then we went to 18, and for people who watching don't know, I hit a drive over the water, and I had 145 yards. Christy O'Connor, who wasn't long, played it safe. He probably had 220.
Yeah, a 200.
So I'm standing there leaning on my bag with Joe, and I'm paying attention to Christy. And the next thing I know, I'm watching the shot, and I'm looking at it, it's going right at the flag. It hits on the green, it rolls up. And then I immediately lost everything in my mind. And I can remember like it was yesterday. And I blocked this 9-iron right of the green, missed the green, chipped it down, outside him, missed it, and then gave him the putt. And that night, I mean, I was crying like I usually can. And so Ray Floyd actually spent way too much time in my room telling me all about, you're going to be a better player from this. You're going to learn from this. Do not worry about this. We lost as a team. And I just was hugging him and squeezing him and, you know, what a way to lose and all this. And so I didn't even know what I did in my other couple matches. I don't know. I lost with Lanny. I may have lost every match I played. I have no clue. I've never looked back at it. And I can tell you from that point on, I started hanging around a little bit with Ray Floyd, mm-hmm. a little bit with Tom Watson, and it was the best thing I ever did.
The highlight of my career was in 1991 when I played in the Ryder Cup at Kiawah Island. I came determined to win, but Fred was after something bigger. He was looking for redemption.
Well, in 89, you know, you felt responsible.
I did.
In 91, you won 3.5 points, and you were responsible. We needed.
Well, I had Ray, I had Ray Floyd. I got a couple wins with him. We were a good pairing. A couple times he told me how to do it, what to do, and I enjoyed that. He was so pumped up, so evil in Ray Floyd's way, but then I was like a little puppy dog. So I did get 2 points with him, and obviously won my singles match.
And did he take care of all the mental warfare and just create a space in which you could play?
Yeah, because after all the mixture, I want to get this right, I think in the morning round with Chip Beck and Paul Azinger with Seve and the mixed ball, and I believe we were dead wrong. I think we interchanged balls, but then they felt a little bit like they waited a long time. And so then the next afternoon, Raymond and I played Jose and Seve. And there was a little bit of noise made on the first tee. There really was.
I believe you.
And then we got to the second hole, and Steve Williams was caddying for Raymond. And Steve told me to stay back. So Raymond and Seve walked probably 30 yards ahead of me. I don't know where Jose was. And then when he came back, he said, we're all good. That'll never happen again. And I said, you know, I'm like, what'd you say? And he said, I said to him, Seve, you can keep doing what you're doing, but I'm way better at this than you'll ever be. So my suggestion would be to stop. That's what
really?
He told me. Yes. So I got a rush out of that.
Yeah, I bet.
And I think at the end of the day, they ended up beating us, though, in a heck of a match.
Yeah, I think they went undefeated.
They probably
in
did.
That particular one. But I'll tell you, I never wanted to play Ray. He was just so tough.
Yeah. I never played money games against him. I just went and spent time with him. And he always told me, he said one thing to me. We played in a few of the shark shootouts and stuff. So he'd hit a drive down there, and I'd go for this par five. The pin would be back right with deep bunkers and a creek to the right. And I'd carve it in there and over-carve it. And he said, son, what are you trying to do there? And I said, well, I'm trying to make an eagle. And he goes, how many eagles did you make last year? And I said, I don't know, 10? How many par fives did you go for in two? I said, you know, I don't know, 60? And he goes, those aren't good odds. He said, aim it for the middle of the green, and if you hit your normal shot, you got a 40-footer for eagle, which is not really an eagle putt. If it cuts a little bit, you're 30 feet, and if you get lucky and overcut it, you're going to have a real eagle putt. But none of this, stop going for these pins like you're going to hit it in there 10 feet, make eagle. And then if Joe LaCava was sitting here, I played par fives in my prime, those 3 or 4 years, better than anybody. I mean, yeah. I was 3 under before I started the round because I knew I was going to birdie 3 or 4 of them. And just something like that stuck. It wasn't so much, you know, I need you to be mentally more strong. I need you to do this like me. He just said, I watched how you play. And that's what I try and do now with these kids. I try and say, you know, hey, your game is so good, you know, maybe you work on from 150 and in. You know, maybe you become better with your 9 and wedge because that's all you're hitting.
Yeah.
You know, don't worry about your 7-iron swing and your 5-irons. Just let's save a shot around if you can. That's 4 shots. That's a lot of golf.
Oh, yeah. Now, in 95, Lanny was the captain, and he chose you as one of his picks. Did that put extra pressure on you?
I don't think so. I think Lanny and I played a little bit, and I was playing pretty well. Maybe we had 2 picks then. And maybe Curtis was mm-hmm. the other choice. And we both kind of did okay, and we both had chances to win the thing. Every captain I've ever had has done a good job, and I felt like being picked, I deserved it.
In 97, in your singles match, you played Ian Woosnam, beat him 8-7, which was the largest margin of victory in the history of the Ryder Cup. That must have been like molesting a Smurf.
Well, you know, in this match, obviously, the old thing is with the team, you know, something had to give. And I enjoyed playing Woozy. And so you can't match up pairings, but somehow we got matched up. And so we went through that match, and I felt really easy. I loved the golf course in Spain. It was good for a long hitter. It was good for putting, and I just went off and started birding and never gave him a shot to get into it. And then, you know, kind of got a big point early, and we got it close, and then Europe did what they do best. They closed us out, you know, the last 5, 6, 7 holes, and the later parts of the players played very, very well for Europe, and they ended up winning again.
What would being a Ryder Cup captain mean to you?
As we sit here today, it would still be a tremendous honor, but I kind of got over it because I think my time, I'm only 59, but 4 years ago after my run as President's Cup, I may have said a couple things to the PGA of America that we had a little talk about it. I actually, with Jay Haas, we wanted to do it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like a couple things that happened, and maybe they looked at that and said, you know, maybe he's not our guy. And one of them is Europe does the same thing. You go to the same dinners we go to. I just felt like it was too much. I felt like if there was one thing I could do, I could calm this down a little bit, which would help our players' mentality.
Yeah, no, you're quite right. It turns into a dog and pony show.
Right, and so that's what I kind of said, but I didn't probably use dog and pony show, and so I never got a call back.
Did it begin with cluster?
Yeah, kind of, you know. It kind of was, it just was too much. And I was an assistant captain with Davis at Chicago. And one of the things that really bothered me was our team on Thursday was only going to play 9 holes. Europe would tee off after us, the Americans would go first, and another day we would go second.
And this is in the practice run.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we told the PGA of America, and they knew. And we asked them, tell the fans, put it in the paper, that we're only going to come out and play 9 holes. They didn't. We went and played with Steve Stricker, Tiger Woods, Joe LaCava, and Steve's caddy, and they're booing these guys. They just driven from their home. They got to the parking lot, they took a bus, they went in, and now they get there and the American team's done. It just left a really, really bad taste in my mouth to witness this. I mean, you're literally booing the team that you come to watch. I thought that was bad taste from the PGA of America. I'm not trying to slap anyone. I'm just saying it's all about the players. The whole thing is about the players. They're winning the points. They're winning the cup. No captain is going to win the Ryder Cup. It's the 12 guys that are going to win it. I'm convinced on that. And I would love to still have a shot at doing it, yeah.
Did we hear that? PGA of America? I think he's making sense here. That's all I can say. Did you emulate anybody growing up?
Growing up, I loved Tom Weisskopf, and then I loved Johnny Miller.
Yeah.
And we all wanted to be Arnold Palmer, who's my all-time favorite.
Yeah.
So easy to be with your buddies. I'm Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer. So
I was Lee Trevino.
There you go. Well, I spent some quality time with him too. But Johnny Miller, there was something about the way he hit the ball, and Tom Weisskopf, I just always liked.
Yeah, statuesque.
But they weren't Jack Nicklaus or Arnold Palmer, but they were right there.
It's been almost 4 decades, and you might think that Freddie's had it all. And considering how laid back he is about everything, you might think it's been easy. But the truth is, Fred suffered setbacks on the course and had to work hard to win.
I'm really nervous on the first tee because I go back to that tee time. It's very important when I get an 8:15 time that at 8:20 that I am playing that first hole very well. There was a time where every round I played, I was even or under par after 5 holes. Then you get the second set of nerves. I'm one ahead of these guys or I'm one behind with 7 holes to play. Now I got to go. And sometimes, you know, I tell people all the time, your hands become a little different. Your swing probably is the same. So the closer I got to the finish line, the few times that I really played poorly, I just didn't handle it very well. And there were other times where I got beat. My goal was to win another major. And if you were to, I'm going this backwards, but if you'd ask me what really bothers me is I can tell you every shot I had, and I had 3 or 4 unreal ones to win another major, and I didn't. Wayne Grady at Shoal Creek, I couldn't even function the last 8 holes. I was ahead of him, falling down to him, and then he passed me. And he played very, very well and solid. You know, losing to Phil in O'Meara at Augusta, you know, and I really had a couple British Opens, but nothing like at Augusta. Mark O'Meara birdied three of the last four holes to win Augusta. He birdied the 18th. That's some great stuff. Where was I? I was in the fairway bunker, then I was in the right bunker, then I blasted out 4 feet. Mark's down the middle, 20 feet, birdie. So you can't really look at those things. One of the best rounds I ever played was when I played with Phil. If you're listening, Phil, I outplayed him, and I learned a lot at an old age that that is really where it's irrelevant. They tell people all the time, look at Phil. When he goes up on the range, he is a winner. This guy just knows how to win. That's why he's so good. Phil, when he plays really well, he's there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That day, I definitely outplayed him, but I didn't outscore him. And the key word in the game of golf is scoring.
Did you know where your power came from?
No. No, it just, sometimes I would think it's in my hands.
Yeah.
And I tell people I grip the club so loose, and obviously when I take it back, you know, the tension comes in. Then, you know, as you get a little older, oh, it's from your hips and your butt or your glutes or whatever, and, you know, or it's how you torque through the ball. But I always felt like I had great hand-eye coordination, and I could hit a ball off any lie. And I had a lot of weird ones, in the trees, in the brush, buried in bunkers. But that was a thing that always kept me going. So the game part of it was just tricking yourself. How do you get better?
Yeah.
It wasn't, for me, it wasn't like trying to figure out a mental part of it. It was more physical.
Mm-hmm.
And can I cut the ball more? Can I hook the ball more? Does my swing let me do that? My swing let me put curve on the ball.
The instant he turned 50, Fred Couples became the poster boy for the PGA Tour champions. Not only is he a fan favorite, but he came out of the gates blasting, winning four times in his first year. Since then, he's added another nine, including two majors.
You were happier than most men when you turned 50, because you kind of got out there and really started a new career on PGA Tour champions.
Yeah, and luckily, I have a good man, Joey. He wanted 1 year, and he told me this in a very polite way, and he's, you're now 18. I'm going to let you go get an apartment, live. And so I won four times my first year on the Champions Tour, and I was glad Joe waited. Then he went on to caddies, you know, for Dustin Johnson a little bit, and then Tiger. And now I'm playing with guys I played with my whole lives. I get Bernard Longer, I get Jay Haws, I get David Toms, I get Vijay.
Yeah.
I'm leaving guys out, Tom Lehman. So that's who you play with. It's really a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever go to a tournament thinking I'm not going to play well or have a shot at winning. If I feel good, I'm going to try and do everything I can to play two tournaments in a row where I get a little movement instead of 1 and 3 weeks off and not playing. So my goal is to play. I've said this for 5 or 6 years now. Used to be I want to win the Schwab Cup, but you got to beat Bernhard or McCarron. So you got to play a lot. But I want to play 15 times.
You get to play in a cart if you want to. Do you walk or do you play?
No, I walk.
You walk?
I walk. I did it. I won a tournament where I rode just to be a bad guy.
Yeah.
And I parked the cart where my second shot was and walked in. I just wanted to see how bad it... I know this comes wrong because a lot of guys ride, but I'm 59. I don't really care if I offend it. I wanted to see how bad it looked to ride a cart around. And I took a cart on, I think, the whole week, but maybe just on Sunday to do it, and Joe couldn't stand it.
Yeah.
Because I'd leave it a lot. He'd have to go get it. And you're not allowed to have the clubs and cart on there. But I just did it to be a bad guy, and it probably worked out, but I won.
It doesn't seem right, does it?
Yeah, no. We're good enough to walk. I mean, there are some guys that have problems, and we want them out there. So if one guy rides, they all want to ride. But it doesn't look like golf to me.
What was your best Champions Tour win?
Probably the British Open at Turnberry. Because I always wanted to win a British Open. And I felt like the courses were built for my game or a lot of people's game, but I'm only worried about me. And Turnberry was set up, I'll be honest, we played one hole where the tee wasn't all the way back, and they were on the fronts, but we played it as a real deal, and there was a lot of rough, and I played really, really well, and I felt like that was a huge accomplishment to win a British Senior Open.
Explain to me how Bernhard Langer seems to be better now than he was when I played with him.
He's the most amazing guy on our tour. He's at a lot of tournaments practicing Monday after he wins on a Sunday. He works really hard, and he sets a precedent for everyone to look at. Scott McCarron plays a lot, plays really hard, works on his game. The guy who was surprising to me, now he's on a little bit of a roll, VJ. We have a lot of guys, but Langer is amazing. I can't say enough about him, except he's got a great game, and he works harder than anybody.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor. We've been doing Faherty for a while now, but every episode I learn something new from our guests. Just like Farmers Insurance knows a thing or two because they've seen a thing or two. So, thanks to Farmers for supporting my show.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
All right then, now back to the show.
Let's go to a time when it wasn't so easy. In 2003, you hadn't won for 5 years, but you go to Houston and win by four, which must have been special in, in Houston. How'd you do that?
There was a little time in there, I think in 2002, where I was staying with Sam Reeves, and I was really kind of down, so I would have been 42 or 3 years old, still playing pretty well. And Sam had mentioned something, and I said, you know, I don't see Paul much anymore. And he says, Butch Harmon's here. I'd like you to work with Butch today. This is at Pebble Beach. So it's on a Tuesday, and I go to the range, and Butch basically pistol whipped me. Man, this is horrible. I hit so many balls that I couldn't grip the club Wednesday. I hit so many balls on Tuesday, my hands were just, first time maybe in my life, raw. Once in a while, I get a cut in my thumb, and it's hard to play, blah, 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 blah. But I'm like, okay, I think I'm getting better. And we never hit anything more than, I think I worked my way to a 5-iron, but I must have hit 1,000 balls. Fast forward a little later on in that year, I won at Houston. I got very emotional because, you know, from Sam Reeves, he just looked at me and said, you're better than this. You know, I think Butch is right here. That's who I work. Sam was 70 at the time, probably 70. And I just couldn't believe I won. And I was out there thinking about all the things. And the last 9 holes, I beat Calcavecchia. And I never missed a shot. And I thought, wow, how much fun is that? And I never won again after that on the PGA Tour. But I did get one more.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how big of a sports fan are you?
10.
Yeah? Which sports? Just all of them?
I will watch anything that's intriguing. So if Messi's playing, I'll watch him.
Yeah.
I do like soccer. I played my whole life. I went to every World Series game, every playoff game, the Dodgers the last 2 years. I do love the Dodgers, and I love sporting events. And we went to LeBron's first home game where the fight broke out. You know, that was weird against Houston. It was all bizarre. But to see the fans there, it was really a neat atmosphere. And so I just found myself just watching LeBron to see what he did, because that's what I enjoy. And when I play with golfers, I watch what they do. It's very weird, but I just try and pay attention to how they mark a ball or how they tee up a ball or do stuff, because I'm standing 4 feet from them, so I might as well pay attention to them.
How big a thrill was it for you to raise the 12th man flag in the Saints Seahawks game on Monday Night Football?
Yeah, first you're way up on top.
Yeah.
And then they want you to run down, not run, but go down these stairs to this glass rail, and it's probably waist high and overlook everyone. That's so not like anything I would ever do, but I got wound up. Guys were telling me they broke a club for me, so when I busted over my knee, it would break. It was already bent and kinked. But it was really fun. And I had season tickets for 3 years to the Seahawks.
Is it true that you would have traded your golf career for if you could have been the center fielder for the Yankees?
Yes. It's so easy to say.
Why center fielder?
Because that's where Mickey Mantle was. And my dad, everything he had was Yankees. My brother, bring him up, was drafted by the Oneonta Yankees. I was forced Yankees. I was 9, 10. I had a batting helmet as a bat boy that had NY on it, which my dad painted on there. So center field just seemed natural. And the Yankees, when I'm 10, I didn't know anything about New York. I didn't know if that's the greatest city in the world to be on a team. I just knew Mickey Mantle. But yeah, I would trade it.
You would have?
I would have, yeah. That sounds, yes.
If you could take a mulligan in life, what would it be?
I wish I had a little better back. Not perfect, but I think I missed a lot of things. even now, some of it is with Hunter. You know, he's 11, Suzanne's son. You go play basketball. My show, I did one little thing my shoulder. So, you know, all these little things, if my back was a little stronger, I probably wouldn't be such a wuss. But if I had a mulligan, it would probably be that. I mean, my parents being alive much longer.
Yeah.
But a mulligan on life, I think it's a pretty darn good one. I'm not complaining.
Mulligans in Life are presented by Farmers Insurance. We know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
Being President's Cup captain has really made me really learn to see how a golf ball is hit, because you're with them practice rounds.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times, I say this, you're standing behind the tee. So you're looking down the fairway. A lot of times when I'm playing, I'll watch you hit and I'm looking at your belly and the ball goes. But when you stand behind them and they say to their caddy, I'm gonna take it down the left side and I'm gonna cut it. And that thing goes down the left side and it cuts and you're standing behind them, it's like magic to me. And I had great times. Dustin Johnson, I just don't know how he doesn't win six times a year, but that guy impressed me more than anybody on any of the teams. Golf has kept a good eye on me. Being on these Ryder Cup teams, being on these President's Cup teams, winning the TPC a couple times, having people look at that. I mean, I don't know how you get in the Hall of Fame, but I'm thrilled that I'm in it. And was I shocked? At the phone call, yeah, I was like, wow.
Was it emotional?
Yeah, it was emotional. I mean, the speech, well, the story of that is Jim Nantz was going to introduce me, and I couldn't think of anyone better. Maybe Paul Marchand, but so he says, give me your speech. He comes in like at 4 o'clock, and the dinner starts at 6, and we're going to go on at 7. So I said, Jim, you know, I've worked on it, but I have it down. No notes, no nothing. It was probably a minute speech, too. I mean, I ripped right through it.
He's a prince.
He looks at me, he goes, so that's your Hall of Fame speech? And I went, yeah. And he goes, no way. So then we sit in a corner, and he starts writing this stuff down on these cards. And I went, and I had the cards on the vanity where you brush your teeth, and I had the shower where I was looking through the glass, staring. I had these cards laid out. I had an hour. He gave me a whole new thing. And I'm like, oh my, now I became just this nervous freak job.
Basket,
you know, it's a speech. What, I'm gonna talk about a few people, and if I don't do great, he goes, no, this is what you're gonna be remembered by. And so anyhow, he did tell me a lot of things to say, and I got through it.
Did you start off with hello, friends?
I did. I said, hello, friends. Yes, no, I did. To get into the Hall of Fame, I don't look at it as when we're playing, you know, on your name, they have the little logo up there. I don't look at that, and I don't really listen to them when they introduce you. I just know that you're a little punk from Seattle, and you're in the Hall of Fame, and you're talking to all these people, and, you know, there's a lot of cool cats in that thing, and I'm one of them, and it's kind of fun, and it's a neat club to be in.
How long did Joey caddy for you?
I had Joe LeCavere for 22 or 23 years.
That's amazing. How would you describe that relationship?
Incredible. There's one thing about Joe that I really hit on. He was very fun-natured and not funny. Like, I don't think I'm funny, but he and I together, we could say stuff and laugh.
Crack each other up?
Yeah, and so when you're on a golf course, the first thing I used to tell him, I need to get to the car. Just leave me alone, once I got in the car, I could look at him and be nice. I was really mean, nasty to him a lot of times, because I wanted to play so well, not for me, but just to finish off a good round. But once I got in the car, I was fine. Then he dropped me off. I'd say, come get me at 6:30, and we'll go to dinner. The next day, we got up and did it again. We did it for 23 years. So he and Tiger, I can see this mesh. Mm-hmm. Tiger loves Joe, and Joe loves greatness. And, you know, and I told him the other day, we were texting back and forth, and I said, you know, it was so much fun watching you win in Atlanta. Just to see it. It was a treat. And he goes, well, you know, I won 5 times with him in 1 year. I said, Joe, I know how many times you've won. He goes, but some people forget about that. And I say, well, yeah, but you haven't gotten a major. And then he texted back, yet. That was his final thing, yet. And I thought, that's Joe, because he's a believer. He believes in his guys, and He was a lot of fun to be around.
There was an episode at the World Series at Firestone, I believe it was, where you and Nick Price, you were, yes, a little pissed off with Joe or something like that there, and you and Pricey actually exchanged caddies.
Yeah, that was on the range of Saturday's round, and we weren't in contention, and I wasn't feeling his comments. And they were, Jimmy Johnson were going back and forth, and I said, I'll tell you what, I've had enough of you, Joe. Jimmy, you want a caddy for me? And he goes, yeah. And then he said, we're hitting right next to each other. Is that okay, Nick? Nick said, yeah, let's change it up. I was in the group in front. I had a heck of a round. Nick also did too. We made our way down, but we laugh about it all the time. But it was just a bang, bang. Joe, I had enough of you. Jimmy, come on. And Jimmy said, yeah. And then they flipped caddies.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got.
Do you remember what Jimmy Johnson said after the round?
The crowd's a lot prettier in your group than with Nick, or something like that. I don't remember.
That's exactly what he said.
It was something like that, yeah. The caddies are a huge part of the PGA Tour, and I like them all. And Jimmy's done it forever, and what a bag he's got now. I mean, how lucky. Yeah. Joey with Tiger and Jimmy with Justin Thomas. I mean, what a blessing.
Yeah. Well, it took me a while to get you.
Yeah.
I really appreciate it, Freddie. Thanks for having me here.
All right, thank you. I enjoyed it. You're the best.
Thank you, my old friend.
No, you got a great show. Glad to be on it.
Fred Couples is one of the most popular players in golf. Not only is he a fan favorite, but he's also a favorite among his peers and definitely a favorite of mine. I love the way he plays and I idolize his approach to relaxation. And I think his swing belongs in the National Gallery of Art. Most of all though, I just love Freddie and I hope now you see why I tried so hard to get him on my show. Thanks, Boom Boom. It was great having a chat with you.
Thanks for joining me, Faherty fans. You can find more of the Faherty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Faherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Faherty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.